Good evening. It's Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, and at the moment we happen to be in the midst of the moment that we happen to be in the midst of. And it is also part of what we're doing is working our way through the American Book of the Dead guidebook by E.J. Gold. But that's just the kind of like the signpost, okay? And many other things float around it and go around it. Because our job is to partially to grab the moment, seize the moment, Pat.
Okay.
And we come into this from many, many, many different venues. We show up, we're suddenly here, we're all here together, and we're going to focus our attention. That's what we're going to do for the moment, is place our attention, and tonight, even though we're not going to start out exactly with it, our attention will be placed on the 17th Book of the Dead, which we'll get to in a moment, but there's a preamble that we'd like to present, and Pat, I'd like you to help us with that preamble.
I'm going to deliver a couple of paragraphs, the last three paragraphs, from the booklet known as My Brother Judas, which someday we might take up The Lost Works. I've never thought of that as a text for us to study, but it might be something that we do later. The brochure, the little pamphlet called My Brother Judas, is specific to certain days, and the day that I'm going to read from is the last day that's referenced in My Brother Judas. That would be Easter Day. They don't call it Easter Sunday, it's Easter Day. And I'm going to read this because I think it makes a difference in relation to what we're going to work with in the material this evening, the guidebook. It is in this hall that the masters wait for their pupils, ready to feed their souls, which have been placed in them for their growth abundantly. Here, absolute knowledge comes as the shell is broken, and the divine man comes forth erect when this ceremony has been fully attained. The earth no longer knows this soul. The completed man takes his place in the hall knowingly. And if this occurs while it is in the body and still active in the world, there is unutterable joy, because then it is possible for that individual to learn to love, to pity, to serve, and to be grateful. This is some of the learning taught within these walls, walls made of the substance of divine thought. In the school of love, there is a pledge taken at the very door. It is this which you must say in your heart: I will love. From that hour, you are a disciple. And to taste of this love is to be fully alive in truth. Complete this portion of the reading from My Brother Judas for Easter Day.
Now, it's just passed.
It just passed.
What is this week? Does this week have a designation?
I do not know. There's various traditions.
Does it? I think it does.
I know the week before.
Yeah, that's Holy Week,
yes.
Usually. It's just that
I
Is anybody, how many people are home? We're just wondering, so we're in the post-Easter week, the week right after, we're still in the reverberations of Easter, and we talk about the new man, and the which is very interesting compared to where we're about to go with chapter 17. It was perfectly timed.
And I just want to say that we didn't discuss this.
No, we didn't. Pat just said today that she wanted to open with a preface. Told me what it was. But where we are now, let's orient to the back to the ABD guidebook,
yes,
okay?
Yes, exactly.
Let's orient back to that, and then you'll be surprised as I was. Okay, and so this is an interesting book for many, many reasons. First of all, it's called the 17th Book of the Dead, called the Book of Ur-Kafid-Ur-Rafi. Those are two separate names of the 99 names of God and of Allah, of God, of the Absolute. So these are, and what we've been studying is that each of these have their different attributes of it. And when you look it up, and I did do a little bit of time looking it up,
good,
and you'll see that the, so last week, let's go ahead and read that first paragraph of book 16. And see what that guy was all about.
The one that we ended with last week, because last week, if you recall, I read paragraph, and then I finished with the first paragraph.
But let's just reread that first verse. The title again.
The 16th book of the dead, called the Book of Ur-Basit. I am he who takes the souls of individuals at the time of death and places these souls into bodies at the conception of life in the world of matter.
Okay, so then we fast forward to a book that has, I don't remember now if I'm reading ahead, I think it might be the only one that has the name of two different attributes of the Absolute coming forth. And one is the Avenger.
Mm-hmm.
And so go ahead and read the first verse.
The verse is, one, I abase those who cannot accept me by isolating them from me and by hiding my glory from them within the vision of the senses. And I exalt those who can accept me by drawing them near to me.
So this is the abaser and the exalter. Those are the two names that are attributed to those attributes of the names of God. So one is, I will abase you if what?
If you cannot accept me.
And then the second guy says what?
If you can accept me.
Now, and then right away, and go ahead and read verse two real quickly.
Two, now it is the time of the reforming of consciousness.
Okay, so immediately EJ is going into then the rebirth section of
the third stage
of the Voyager and where he's going. But he's dealing with these two, he brings forth these two guys. So the El-Basit before was Ur-Basit in this formation was saying, I'm the guy that brings the body, the soul back to the body.
Mm-hmm.
And then these two just simply say, it doesn't say that you have any skills, does it?
No.
It just simply says you either don't or
right.
you do.
You cannot accept me or you can accept me.
So it's not a matter of your skill set so much as what? It's a matter of your the attitude, in a sense, that you bring to it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read this, it made me think so much of the idea of what I've been calling this idea of active surrender, where in consciousness you figure out, how do I surrender right now? First of all, is this a moment
mm-hmm.
in which I must surrender?
Mm-hmm.
And then you do it. When you started reading from Brother Judas, I could feel, I said, okay, what does it feel like to surrender to Pat's reading right now?
Mm-hmm.
And I could feel myself working to relax my will
mm-hmm.
and listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes. And there must be acceptance and, in the case of what you're describing, agreement and what you said, active surrender. All of those parts have to be part of this.
So we don't know what it is where we're... I mean, here's this guy, this, Uru Rafi comes along and he says, just accept me. Well, what does that mean? So the second you go to your formative mind, you're lost.
Yeah.
Because then you must evaluate. And the very principle of this is such, you don't have the capacity...
No.
To do that.
And we would reference that in the physical form as your intuition or your second nature or your gut feeling, or we would have all these terms for describing it if we're in our physical form. In this condition, it actually doesn't name the manner in which it must be done. It simply says you must do it.
So how do we do that? So for me, it's, is our sensing up enough to know when it is time to open up to the space and not defend ourselves from the space?
It's a matter of practice. It's a matter of practice. The following paragraphs in this book 17
yeah.
actually indicate that very clearly. But this is something that we were speaking about last week, and that's why I wanted to bring this section up from my brother Judas. My brother Judas defines a certain type of discipline, a practice. And one of the things that we spoke about at the end of last week was, please take the book and read it aloud. Even if it's not for anyone in specific.
Right.
And I had two people tell me that they actually did this.
Really?
They thought about, oh, I heard what you said, and I thought, I'm just going to do a reading. And it was for the benefit of all beings everywhere or, several different instances. But the practice is activate the principle that you are reading about, that you are learning about, but activate it. Don't let it just sit there and be dormant. It has to be activated. That's what's called a practice. And that's what gets you through the places where you don't know how something needs to be handled, like this instance here where it says, you cannot accept me, I will isolate you and hide my glory. If you can accept me, I will exalt you. So you don't have the moment to consider. It has to be, in the words of the physical form, second nature to you. It has to be a leap of faith. It has to be the practice that you have developed of putting it out there. You're using the word active surrender. I use the word, practice. So we have some clues, but we only learn by doing it, not a discussion.
So in Dante's work, there are three parts, which is the Inferno, Purgatorio, and Heaven. Okay.
Yep.
And in Paradise, and I always wondered, because the people that are in Purgatory are sinners.
Yeah.
They have sinned, they're being in the seven story mountain and all that stuff, and they're being challenged for ego, greed, all the various things.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the guys in hell? They're sinners too. What's the distinction?
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes very, very clear when you read it a little bit that there's a very clear and distinct difference. The people in purgatory are repentant.
Yeah. Capacity for change.
They have the sense of the capacity for change. They're not stuck in the righteousness of their actions. That, to me, answers the question, what does it mean? Cannot see me. Because that's what he says in the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Those who cannot.
Yeah. Cannot accept me.
Not, you're not willing to, or you'd like to, but I'm too high for you to see.
Mm-hmm.
He just said cannot, that we're blocked because of our own fixedness. So there has to be the development of a certain kind of sensing mechanism that allows us to move through these fields,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And you have to know, is this right or is this wrong in terms of general broad directions? And he's telling us, if you could just kind of see me,
mm-hmm.
be willing to see me, then you're in.
And there's complete description of those methods there, but I want
so
to
let's
actually,
go ahead and go right into
did
that.
Did you want to do those?
No, I want you to go wherever your intuition tells
you. I wanted
to
go
start.
Right to seven, because
okay. Go ahead.
For me, the challenge of this particular verse is that, you know, I have my upbringing, and my upbringing didn't include this particular concept. And I really struggled for, I don't know, 15 or 20 years with this idea. So here's verse 7. And you found that you were Adam, the son of Adam, and that there were two Adams, one in the world and one not in the world. And here's the fix. 8. Was all the consciousness intact? And previous to this, all of these prayers have said, with all your senses intact. It says, with all your consciousness intact, while wandering through the endless endlessness, I now have the power to change the dream, being both the dream and the dreamer. So, the components of a double-named title
That's
to
right.
this chamber, a statement of seemingly oppositeness. If you cannot accept me, then you're isolated. If you can accept me, then I'm drawing you in. So those two elements appearing to be opposite or different. And here's the kicker. There's two atoms. What do you mean? I know it. There's only one Adam, rib and, you know, blah, 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 with Eve and the garden and et cetera. I'm going, wait a second. What is the description here? Formed and formless. In the world, not in the world. Dream and dreamer. This is an inclusive chamber. It's including the potential of the voyager to accept by practice. You have to stimulate something to make that, I don't know, leap of faith, step of faith, take the challenge, whatever, you know, analogies are going to fit here. But it's movement in the sense of spirit embodied in motion. That's where I go.
Okay.
I think this is a fantastic chamber.
Yeah, this chamber is quite interesting.
Lovely.
I'm going to leap ahead here
yes,
to
please.
13.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Yes, please.
I mean, there's a whole thing about how it
how it feels, yeah.
Dan, do you want to close that door and see if that helps at all? And so 13.
Yes.
And there shall appear to you many variations and formulations of ego consciousness. And you shall choose one of these.
Yeah.
And that manifestations which you choose shall be your new life mm-hmm. in the world. And you cannot alter your choice once you have been reborn. What about this? And you shall choose one of these.
Yep. Isn't that a kicker?
So, George, when I read this last night and early this morning, I thought of you, this particular verse, okay? And I wanted to ask you what your thoughts on or what your reflections might be.
Well,
is that okay?
For sure, you know, as I'm reading along with you and trying to feel its application in my life, I approach it from this particular point of view. We struggle initially before we become practiced, as Pat would say, to differentiate the refined vibration of our essential self, which includes all of these aspects of God. After all, our essence is that particle. And in the process of learning about ourself, our nature, the nature of our essence, and how our essence is perceiving its place in the totality of all surrounding cosmic events, it becomes easier to reflect our personality and the various things that go into the manufacture of our particular personality, arising from heredity, things we just get through our genes, together with childhood experiencings and influences that kind of shape the development of our consciousness. And now, I think that this particular book and this particular verse 13 is in a sense directing us to shift the center of our gravity over to our developed sense of essence under this dual title, and perceive how the consciousness of our personality can be formed or is in fact formed, and then be able to make a conscious decision about which reformations of consciousness have the best habits for maintaining the practice of invoking presence, self-remembering. So that's kind of how I'm reading this particular book and this particular verse.
You know, you've heard me talk in the past about Jody's old teacher, Beloved.
Yes.
Okay. And he's an interesting fellow, and I've met him a number of times. And I asked him this question, basically. I said, how does this come about, that we form manifestation? He said, well, when you're in that space, you realize what your karmic work is, and you choose a lifetime to help you solve that karmic problem. Unfortunately, as soon as you are born, you do everything you can to run away from that weakness, and you hide from that particular problem. And that's called buffering. We buffer ourselves from what it is our work is to be. But when I was thinking about this person sitting there, and this person is sitting there, and they're waiting to be, and there shall appear to you many variations and formulations of ego consciousness, and then you shall choose one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking of the guy sitting there, and he's all bright and bushy-tailed, and he's thinking, I am going to choose one of these, right? I am going to choose one of them. And there's no judgment. So if you have a karmic issue and you want to be reborn in a school so you can work out those karmic issues, you have no judgment about yourself in it. You just bright and bushy-tailed say, I'm going to work on this.
Yeah.
I'm going to put myself in a position where that can become my life's work.
Now, one of the aspects that Silverdale has mentioned that we have to really highlight in everything that you said, George, is just it is the level of mastery of discernment that you described there that has reached a certain pinnacle, sophistication, whatever you want to call it, maturity, that allows you to change the emphasis from the recognition of yourself as a form that has a sensation and phenomena, etc., to this alternative, mm-hmm. to this correspondingly encompassed but not the same body of essence, the body of habits, and the body of habits carrying with it, you know, the residue or whatever word you want to use from it, of the previous incarnations and learnings mm-hmm. and masteries thereof. So, you know, you're actually describing something that has a certain, bad language, but I'm going to use it anyway, quantitativeness, stuffness of observation and recognition and discernment of self from the spirit scale. And that, you know, this is a high level of perception here that's being referenced in this.
Very
in this
high
chamber.
Level. Very
really,
high level.
Really specific.
The subtleties are immense. And it's curious, if you start carrying around with you right now this idea, here's how you manifested this time. Here it is, right here. We are experiencing that choice point that we made 66 years ago.
And by the way, Dave, if I could just interject.
Please do.
When we first read this sentence, we're confronted with possible reformations of consciousness. Of course, into my mind flashes, oh, geez, how will you ever pick one among a million just to get started? And then I flip the coin over and I say, oh, no, part of what EJ's guidance is there are, in fact, only six lower worlds before you're inhabiting the white light. So you might develop a discernment of, oh, yeah, that's a brute world, that's a hell world, that's a human world, that's a world of jealous gods, that's the world of the gods. But fundamentally, I recognize the subcategory, and I suppose, like Mother Teresa, we may decide to take rebirth in the brute world just so that we can practice presence in the midst of the worst sort, or hopefully we're wise enough to say, well, I will not even choose the world of the gods because that's a de-evolutionary step from what really my immediate state is. So
if you're at the level of capably evaluating. And that was my other point that I wanted to say here from how you described this. I had an experience on Saturday where I was in a grocery store, and without a doubt, I knew I was in the Bardo's at that moment. And everything that I saw, everything that I looked at, everything that my feet were touching, my eyes were viewing, everything was not as it normally should be, okay? Not what my experience tells me things usually are. And I say to myself, oh, I'm just recognizing the Bardo's as they always are here all the time.
All the time.
I'm not seeing anything differently that isn't always here. It's just for some reason I have uncoupled one or two little bits, and that has allowed a different view. Not to say that my capacity for operating was any different, but my recognition was different.
You recognize both the dreamer and the dreamer in yourself in that
moment. Exactly, yes. So it's there's sort of these things being pointed out in this particular book, which have to do with the quality of a practice, however we're defining that, our attention and encouragement of ourselves to continue with that as a practice, and then some degree of maturation or maturity in that practice, which allows you to do a small bit of evaluation, just what you were describing. Oh yeah, maybe I would like to not take that incarnation because, you know, World of the Gods is not going to contribute to my path. If you could do that level of evaluation, which I'm not capable of. But the description that you're giving has to do with some form of objectivity about your circumstances. And that's another thing that's not commonly referenced in all of these previous texts. It chastises you if you have not done it. It says, oh, you fell back. Now it's actually giving a description if you are doing it. It says, and you cannot alter your choice once you have been reborn. I'm going to do 14. And you shall choose according to your desires and to your beliefs in spirit and in the world, mm-hmm. and your inclinations shall rule over you, except you have surpassed them and rule them. And if you are drawn to the apparitions and visions that appear before you now, you shall be reborn into the sixth world. So it gives the same data as it normally does, but it includes this very fine distinction, which is, you could have a level of, let us say, balance, not being overwhelmed, so that you could do a small bit of evaluating. And that's a distinction. Okay, I'm done rambling.
What do you got over there, Dan? No, we're going to get more than the heat.
Well, we have Art of NGF saying, when are we not in the Bardos?
Well, the answer to that is the proper question is, where is your discernment? Where is your, that's what Pat is saying, is that her discernment was there. Like, I had exactly the same type of experience this morning at a meeting I was at. I was so far gone into the other side of the veil, I could almost couldn't bear being there, because I was seeing the vibratory sensations of the experience and not the physical world as much, and it was very, very difficult to be in the meeting in a certain way. Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, he says he typed it right before Pat said the same thing.
Lovely.
Okay. So, Pat, it's a great question.
I like it.
It's a critical question because it's the development of our discernment that is one of the great tools that we can foster in this lifetime. We can learn to discern different spaces, and when we learn those different spaces, then we can... we know what door to go through, in a sense.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So let's just go on. There's some really remarkable stuff. You have 14, mm-hmm. and then 16 is, and so you are now preparing for rebirth because.
Yes. That's what I mean. Yeah.
You have not recognized the apparitions and visions as formations of your own consciousness. So we are now headed toward rebirth, and it might be a designer rebirth. I mean, we'll be decided to come back to the world. And if you are now able to allow yourself to remain in the state of pure, clear, luminous void, non-located and non-acting,
even now you shall still attain liberation. And if you reach or withdraw, or if you are not at rest and in peace with this state, then your hunger, desires, attachments to things of the world shall draw you into rebirth.
And in the Book of Rebirth are the instructions for the careful choosing of a suitable womb and the instructions for closing the womb door to an unsuitable womb. This is another thing I have struggled with.
Did I hand that book to you, George? Did I leave it with you?
I was just about to say, which book did I over? How did I overlook this book?
Yeah, I think I left it at on your shelf there when I left last time.
I wish you had. I'm sure I would have read it several times.
But consider the thought of it, too, though. I mean, EJ is basically, I think when he was reading this, he was looking at that book. You know, he was able to see the bloody thing. And that's okay. At least what he's done for us is he's left a marker saying that such a thing exists. And I think the Book of Rebirth is the book that we design. We design in the manner that our life so tells us to design. And how do you, here's a great trap on when it comes to, that I discovered in myself, and that this whole thing of, and it's in back on 17 at the mm-hmm. last sentence of it, and if you shall reach or withdraw, or if you are not at rest and in peace in this state, then your hunger, desire, and attachment to things. Sometimes you feel entitled to certain hungers and attachments. I notice this in myself. I feel entitled to this hunger, this attachment, this desire, because I've worked so hard.
Yeah. I agree with you. You have.
I have. And that, and all of that does is that it keeps me locked into my desires and hungers.
And what you cannot see, I cannot see, when I'm in the midst of that, is that it is an ongoing playing out
mm-hmm.
of my own consciousness. And guess what? It's for the benefit of my own consciousness that it's playing out. Why aren't I paying attention? Why did I do all of that? I didn't even notice. I didn't even get the benefit of all of that, you know, especially when we talk about this next line here.
Go ahead.
Which says, 19, and in choosing rebirth, the being of higher spiritual being shall not choose a couple in an embrace of passion, nor will he choose a couple in loud and aggressive love play, nor a couple whose breath is not controlled, nor a couple whose degree of reverie is not deep and peaceful. And by these signs, he shall see them and he shall know them. That is a description of deep meditation.
By these signs?
Yes.
What signs?
The signs of not loud and aggressive love play, not uncontrolled breath, not casual and unpeaceful reverie.
Right.
So, yes, how do you name what this is? You name this. It says, don't choose a couple in an embrace of passion. Well, a lot of stuff we have grasped to ourselves, and if you put it in the formulation of a love-making couple, you can see a lot about the internal play that you're not observing in yourself. It's just being manifest in the form of a couple.
Let me
jump right in.
Diverge a little bit and talk a little bit about the idea of some of the concept of lovemaking and why sometimes we get caught up in what's so-called the passion of it. In the proper practice of this state, of this coupling, there's a lot more energy. And the energy we call passion. You know, I'm passionately attracted to you. I'm passionately this, I'm passionately that. But if you can eliminate the characterization of it as passion, and you just denote the energy.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
And you just note that, and you can go through the door of that's not supposed to be.
Yeah.
And you go through the door that allows you to go through, if you sidestep the passion part of it.
Yes.
At that point, the electrical bodies can begin to merge simply as electrical bodies. And they, as a merged electrical body, will put forth a tone, and that tone is what can be answered by someone seeking a particular type of rebirth.
Well, there's another part to this, and the phrase is embrace of passion. And if you exchange that word passion for energy,
right,
and then you change the word embrace, which means grasp, to release of energy, not holding, release of energy. And if you name the breath as a controlled breath, controlled breath is a breath that has consciousness, not reactionary.
In this same way, in this particular lovemaking, if you are conscious of it, if you're in consciousness, then the energy is just another tool that you're using to elevate.
And the third step there, the degree of reverie. If we think about reverie, it's not a word that we frequently use in our 21st century life.
Mm-hmm.
So reverie, by definition, is something unique to our normal, ordinary forms of consciousness. Investigate reverie, and then you would investigate
So 19 talks about both sides of that equation.
Yes.
And in a certain way it is, and I know that if Claude was here, he'd be talking, he could tell us more about the equation of two electrical bodies coming together as electrical bodies.
Exactly.
Okay, and it takes that kind of energy, it's a plus and a minus, and it becomes one Adam,
I'm hearing you.
A-D-A-M.
I'm hearing you.
Okay. And then you can go forth and finally make it to maybe verse 20.
And the method of the choosing of a womb is made easy by the increased and clarified state of lucidity in the third stage of transit. And by the guide who shows the various lifetimes which are proper to the being at this rebirth. Is that not, that's icing on the cake.
I mean, so the guide?
Yeah.
The guide?
Yeah.
Who shows you the various lifetimes?
Yes. Yeah. If you're in this nice, simple, qualified state of lucidity. You know what lucidity is, right? Clarity, you know? It's clean, it's clear, it's pristine. It's not confused. It's not all the things that we were having the issues with in the previous 16 chambers.
Yeah, it is. The lucidity is an it's the beauty of objectivity. When we think of objectivity, we think that it strips the beauty of things. It doesn't. It actually reveals their beauty without the overlay of our judgment.
It clears away things so that the refinement is available.
So we can stand in the lucidity of this moment if we are either seeking rebirth or we're providing a portal for that rebirth as well.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway,
yes.
Good work.
So if there's questions about what you should choose, the guide is there to show the lifetimes which are proper, which is an interesting thing because the formulation in verse 13 says,
mm-hmm.
there shall appear to you many variations and formations of ego consciousness. This formulation says the guide who shows the various lifetimes. So I equate those two to be similar but not exactly the same because this wording says proper to the being.
But go directly into the next 21.
And the danger in rebirth is not the choosing of the womb, but the resistance to a womb that is not suitable and which one does not wish to enter.
Huh? Isn't that interesting?
That's
so, you know, I had one of my first teachers was a guy named Richard Rose. Fabulous guy. I'm very glad that I worked with him. He was the tie that I had to Lee Goldstein, by the way. But anyway, Rose would say, well, he was a West Virginia hillbilly, happened to be kind of a Zen enlightened guy too, but he would say, yeah, well, you know, you can't really know the truth directly. You don't have the capacity. You may not have the capacity, but you know you have the capacity to retreat from untruth. And that plays into this paragraph. Maybe you don't know exactly what's right, but you know you may know what's not right. And so you can just slide away from it every once in a while. So that's one of the skill sets that we must develop is the skill set of discernment, once again, it comes back to that.
And this is something I'm just noticing now. Okay. You know, we were speaking about if Claude was sitting with us, we would get the molecular biophysics distinction about, you know, the electron, the atoms, and those particles. And this word here, I've always taken this word to mean something different, but I think I'm hearing it now. And the danger in rebirth is not the choosing of the womb, but the resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Resistance is something that EJ talked about many years ago as developing a tolerance in your musculature and your electronic system for higher tolerance to be able to handle more energy, to be able to have the capacity to allow greater electronics, higher energy field. This says what you need is to be able to have resistance to a womb that is not suitable. What does that require? I've never thought about this before. That requires a higher tolerance to not be sucked in. You need to be able to be strong in your choice, or at least strong in your resistance to something that should not be your choice. So that's another use of that word resistance, that electronic field resistance. That's what I'm seeing here. I've never seen that before.
So when we're studying this material, what's happening is that the author is telling us, here's what's possible for you. You can learn in these ways. You can learn these things. It's there to learn, and you will need that discernment skill set at a certain point. So now is the time to learn it. How are you practicing your skills of discernment on a day-to-day basis? And so let's just wander right into that last verse there.
Please do.
Do you want me to go ahead and
yes,
just read
please.
It on ahead?
Unless someone else over there, Dan, does someone else want to read it?
Well, they're not on the phone. Is oh. there any other questions?
No? Okay, good. Yeah, go.
Okay. 22. And the primary problem in this third stage of transit is to be able to close the womb door to an unsuitable womb and to be able to differentiate between one womb and another in one world or another, because in this stage, the visions cannot be trusted and the senses are so confused that things are not what they seem. And now begins the third stage of transit. So, you know, it's like you look at your tool belt of skill sets when you come off of a study of practical work on self or things like that, and what you come away with, what skills do you learn? Well, you learn the concept of sensing. You learn the pond exercise of parting the Red Sea, not reacting. You learn the value of the last hour of life in
mm-hmm.
chapter 24.
Yes.
Walking between raindrops.
The concept of walking between raindrops. And you learn the sensing exercises that are presented there. These are pragmatic exercises in a highly skilled set of spiritual work. This is remarkable stuff is presented to us. So if you have, you know, tell us from time to time, if you, like, how do you practice discernment? What do you do to practice discernment? How do you place yourself in a position where you must practice discernment?
Very good question. Well formulated.
Who's Dan? How are we doing over there? You know, one way you can do it is you don't have to, you think, well, gosh, I guess I better understand what discernment is. You don't need to start there. You don't need to start with skill sets. What you need to start with is effort and attention. For instance, maybe you don't even know what discernment is, but you walk into the store, you walk into work, you get in your car, whatever it is, just discern between light and dark or left and right and feels good or doesn't feel good, tastes good, doesn't. Note that you're doing that. Don't just react and do it. Note, oh, I just noticed I choose banana nut bread rather than yogurt. There was a discernment process going on there. And if you continue to practice that, it'll become a mantra for you. And your discernment will be going on all the time.
Laura says, bright lights, dull lights are one thing I work with a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's very important one. That's a sign you'll see throughout the Bardo guides, you know, light, dull lights, bright lights. So, you know, in the Red ABD and also in here somewhat, you see a lot the bright green light
mm-hmm.
and the dull white light.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what does it mean by that? What is meant by that? Well, there's a bright white
yes,
light.
There it is.
Right?
Yep.
So we can see that right here. And so I guess the exercises that helps us to develop our inner discernment is to practice it however you can.
The qualitative change? How do you notice it? That's what you're looking for. How do you discern the qualitative change of anything? In front, behind,
yeah.
Distance, close, far. It could be any of those. It doesn't make a difference which aspect you use to start strengthening your skills of discernment. Remember, most of what needs to take place is bringing that which has been asleep awake and then paying attention to it. That's all. That's really all that's required. Just start bringing it awake and pay attention. I bet that might be it for tonight.
How are we doing? Huh?
That's that over.
Dan's done.
No, but we have a small request. Okay, we'll do one thing for you, okay? Since you just have to get all of it in 1 5-minute pitch.
Go ahead. I know what you're going to do.
And you found that you were Adam, the son of Adam, and that there were two Adams, one in the world and one not in the world. With all the consciousness intact while wandering through the endlessness, I now have the power to change the dream, being both the dream and the dreamer. The 17th book of the dead called the Book of Ul-Kafid Ur-Rafi.
Okay.
She's shooting stars at me with her eyes.
Bright, shining.
I look forward to seeing everyone next week.
Dan, are you going to say something?
We have a comment from Paula. It's incredible how many thoughts this talk opens.
Good. Keep doing it then. How many thoughts this talk has opened for
Thank
her?
You, Paula.
Thank you, Paula. And thank you, everybody, for coming
yes.
tonight.
And
for being there. And Pat, thank you for making
yes,
it back.
Yes, I did.
And Marvette, the incredible work you do to keep us alive.
Yes, to keep us centered here.
I'm
in
just so
nice
glad
chamber.
That we give you a chance to rest, you know, during the evening. So we'll see everybody next week. Good night.